Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Man, I'm pumped up for Sunday. Texans Bears, Sunday Night Football, 7:20 kick, 4:20 Texans countdown. If you're going out to the game, stop by, say hello. We're out there right on the stage in between the dome and the stadium along the boulevard there. Should be a whole lot of fun. First primetime game at NRG Stadium since... Well, not first prime time. There was a, you know, back when you had to have Thursday night games, they had a couple like against the Eagles and the Panthers during the Lovey and Culley years. But Sunday night football, Monday night football, like the original primetime spots, first one since week 13 of 2019 when a Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins led Texan team beat Tom Brady and a flu addled New England Patriots team.
Did they take two planes, the Patriots?
I think they did, actually.
Like,
yeah.
The flu plane and the non-flu plane.
Yeah, I think they did. They quarantined half the team on a plane. Yeah.
I got to go do that. I'd like to hear an oral history of that and interview the flight attendants who are on the flu plane.
Oh, dude. They were the first ones to mask up before masking was cool.
Hey, okay, so here's the thing, Debbie. Every player on this plane might need diapers at some point,
dude,
because it's a bad situation. Okay,
we're
basically sending you into the heart of Ebola here on this flight. But good luck.
That was a defending Super Bowl champion Patriots team. You know that there were Patriot fans that they could have raised hundreds of thousands for charity and auctioned off being the flight attendants for some of those Southies, like, you know, Sully and Marty O'Brien from the South Side of Boston. Paying $100,000. Now you got to be a flight attendant. Now here's the thing. These guys all have some sort of deathly ill flu. Oh, that's fine. No problem. No problem at all. I'll mask up. I'll be fine.
You're not allowed to ask them questions about the Patriots. Wait a minute. Yeah, I mean, I can't ask Brady what the hell he was thinking on last week.
Yeah. Right. I can't ask about why did you bench Malcolm Butler? Why did you bench Butler last year, Belichick? Let's get to C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud, recurring theme in the C.J. Stroud press conference yesterday, talking about the game against the Colts on Sunday and what they're hoping to accomplish. And I think we saw a lot of this across the league where there was a lot of rust in the passing game with a lot of teams this week. And it was a pretty low-scoring week, very low passing yardage week. Like, a lot of fantasy owners who won games were like, I didn't think I was going to win. My quarterback sucked. Yeah, a lot of quarterbacks sucked. CJ didn't suck, but he was really good, actually. But it took a little while to get going, and he pointed that out multiple times. Here's the first one. Very first cut from the press conference.
I would say it just takes time, but it's really just about communication, being honest, saying what you like, saying what you don't like, and then just the physical rep. So, yeah, I mean, you don't know until you know. Like, it takes until the first couple of games to, like, get a feel for each other. But I feel like we got clicking pretty fast after we, like, stopped shooting ourselves in the foot for so long. So,
okay, shot them. So the question there was what goes into players trusting each other.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know if there was necessarily rustiness or miscommunication between CJ and the receivers. I thought the most glaring issues with the, some of the rustiness was on the offensive line. I think some of the mistakes they made, I think, will be ironed out pretty quickly. I'm not so worried about that. It was more so mental and technique than it was physical. Titus Howard had some rough snaps that started with his footwork and got cleaned up as the game went along. So I think there was some rustiness there. There were a couple moments. There were at least a couple miscommunications or misunderstandings between CJ and Joe Mixon in the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
Remember where CJ thought that Joe Mixon was going to be there for a fake or what have you?
Yeah, and so, Joe ran the other way.
Yeah, there may have been a check at the line that Joe didn't get, and that stuff got ironed out as the game went along. But those are the things where I feel like, all right, that's might seem like no big deal, but it's a wasted snap on a drive. And I guess I wish I could chalk up Laremy Tunsil's two false starts to rustiness, but that's him in peak midseason form.
Yes.
So, yeah. And one of those was a drive killer.
Yeah.
One of them, it went from 3rd-and-2 to 3rd-and-7, and they were out on that set of downs. So it's just so frustrating.
Yeah.
That's not rustiness. That's who he is. And I don't know what to say about it. It's so frustrating.
Yeah. Yep. So that was the first cut. Then the second cut. Question asked, are you guys just scratching the surface right now?
Most definitely. I think watching the film from last week, there was definitely a lot of plays we left on the field. We could clean up a lot of things. I definitely think that we barely show what we got, but it's kind of cool because we still did kind of play pretty good. Once we stopped shooting ourselves in the foot, the plays that we ran good looked great, but the ones that we just barely missed on, like it's like the little small things, if we clean those up, man, I think we would have had a way better day. But definitely great to learn and to win.
That is the thing, Seth. Like, he statistically had a phenomenal game. CJ, he had a passer rating of 115.6. It wasn't like prolific yardage, and he ran for a $160 with Joe Mixon in a game where CJ, the quarterback, is sitting there sounding like it was a C-plus game for the offense. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah, and I think that's where the bar has been raised, and especially with the anticipation and expectation of the offseason with these wide receivers. You've had this image of, oh, they're going to throw for 400 yards every single game. If a team does decide to play soft coverages and play conservatively to try to limit all that, then, okay, take advantage of it in the run game. And I think that's the part where it's an academic thing that CJ knew, you know, that, all right, you're going to have to be really patient and just dink and dunk your way and use the run game. But it's harder to play out in real time when you're antsy to go out and just unleash hell on the opponent. So it's probably good for CJ in some ways just to feel that and to understand, even in a close game, you got to bide your time. You got to bide your time. You got to take your opportunities when they're there, but you can't force anything. It was good for him to get reps doing that in a loss, I think, and understand that not every game is going to be fireworks. It's not going to be a Hall of Fame performance every single time just because you have these three wide receivers.
Yeah, I think, honestly, as much... Well, let's play one more from CJ, then I'll give you my thoughts. Getting back to the action, CJ starts talking about last weekend again here.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, I think early on, you know, the jitters, they played some different coverages that we didn't think they were going to play. Backed up a lot, played a lot of soft zone, and a lot of defenses are going to make us play true and make us methodical, and that's fine. We'll do what we have to do to execute, but I think in that game we learned it's all about us, man. Like, we don't shoot ourselves in the feet. Like, I don't think we're going to be really hard to stop, especially... It really starts and really will always be up front. And if our O-line plays like that, man, it's going to be hard for us to lose. And you know, I definitely do think, like, we have so much left on the bone that we can, you know, still get. And I'm really excited just to keep working with these group of guys. It's really fun just being in here every day with those guys.
I think that game was probably, as much as CJ refers to the glitchiness of the game, especially early on, I think that was about as close to what D'Amico and Bobby Slowick are looking for as far as a game script goes, where it's, hey, we throw for, you know, 235, 250, spread it out amongst a bunch of guys. We're humming in the red zone. That was big. We're closing out the game on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think the only, to me, like, the one thing I think they rather would have done better was they were more inefficient in the next zone outside the red zone in that game than they were in the red zone. Like, there was a reason Kymie Fairbairn kicked 3 50-yard field goals in that game, is they bogged down when they got to whatever color that zone is right there between the 20 and the 40. I think that's the only thing they would correct. I think the balance that they had is exactly how they would love to draw it up on the chalkboard every week.
Yeah, the frustrating thing wasn't that they had to be methodical. It was that there were times when, in being methodical and being patient, there were errors that kept them from being explosive. So, for instance, okay, they're going to take the top off this offense and we're going to run some screens. And they had a screen set up perfectly for Joe Mixon to just have a huge, huge gain. But for whatever reason, Shaq Mason just kind of froze and didn't go attack the guy that he was supposed to block. And that was enough uncertainty that Joe Mixon kind of didn't have a clean read on it. He tried to go outside instead of just hitting upfield. And you clean that up. And it's not even like Shaq Mason has to make a good block on that. He's just got to go out and try to get the guy.
Right.
And that would have been enough for Joe Mixon just to hit upfield, just by having a body between him and – but Shaq Mason ended up being a speed bump instead of somebody who was paving the way. And then also Shaq Mason missing that twist where it was just really easy for a veteran offensive lineman to pick up that defensive tackle twist. Those kinds of things, you clean those up. And some of those boring plays – turn into big plays if you just clean that little simple stuff up.
Yeah. You clean up that boring stuff, and then it turns into explosions, turns into fireworks. That's fun. I can't believe I'm texting this. This is a texter, obviously. But considering how horrible Deshaun Watson is playing for the Browns, is it time to give Tim Kelly some flowers for the way he apparently, quote, coached up Deshaun while he was here?
I think so. I think we've done that. It's never like emphatic praise or anything now, but you always have to remember, though, too. And this was the frustrating thing about that 2020 season, is that they weren't scoring points. Deshaun put up prolific passing numbers, but they weren't scoring points.
Yes.
They were a middle-of-the-road offense. And one frustrating thing for me during that year, that was pre-allegations or anything like that, was that, you know, and I would say during the year, I got uncomfortable that Deshaun Watson would get up and accept all the praise for what a brilliant passing performance he had in a game that they lost or didn't actually put up points.
Right.
Because it should be, as the quarterback, it's not about your passing numbers, it's about the offense in total. And the good thing about a game like the one versus the Colts was it reminded me a lot of those days when the Patriots would decide, oh, you know what, Colts, in your pretty white uniforms, you know what we're going to do today? We're going to play with six offensive linemen and rush for 300 yards.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do to your pretty little defense over there.
Yep.
And that's what it felt like. So it was cool that it happened versus the Colts. That, all right, you know what? Cool. You take away the passing game. We're going to punish you and embarrass you in front of your friends, families, and inbred fans. And that's what they did. They embarrassed them in front of those inbred hillbillies in a state that doesn't even have hills.
They absolutely did. As far as Deshaun goes, the latest there, we'll drop this in here, because if you haven't seen it, if you're listening to this show, then you probably know already. Deshaun is the defendant in a lawsuit right now that was filed against him by another Tony Busby client. This one claiming a lot of similar things, some much more graphic, though, that Deshaun did sexual assault wise while they were on a date, or they were getting ready to go on a date at her apartment while she was getting ready. And so he's being sued. It's a civil lawsuit, and Rusty Harden is Deshaun's defense attorney once again here. Rusty Harden issued a statement yesterday saying Deshaun strongly denies the allegations in the Jane Doe lawsuit filed Monday. We've asked him not to comment further while this matter works its way through the courts, but are comfortable he will ultimately be vindicated. We will be ready to defend this case in court at the appropriate time, but don't intend to conduct our defense in the media. We would ask that people be patient while the legal process runs its course. In the meantime, Deshaun is going to focus his energy and concentration on football. Deshaun did media yesterday in Cleveland. He did his weekly starting quarterback press conference. And this was the exchange that took place in the first minute and change of that press conference.
Deshaun, I know it's going to be all about football, but can you just comment on the statement that Rusty put out so we hear just your thoughts about what he said?
Yeah, I mean, the statement is the response that, you know, we talked about. And, you know, everything that he put in that statement is exactly what, you know, how I'm feeling and what we're going, you know, through this process with.
How do you not let this become a distraction as you prepare for Jacksonville?
I focus on football. I focus on keeping the main thing the main thing, and that's when I walk into this building, focusing on being the best quarterback I can be, on the game plan, and trying to be better than we were last week so we can get a W.
How much impact, everything that's going on in your life that you talked about after the game, did that affect you Sunday? Just how much is all this affecting you off the field?
Like I mentioned Sunday, I don't like to make excuses or anything like that. Those 3 hours, 4 hours we're on the field, I got to lock in and do my craft and execute my plan as a quarterback. So, you know, again, I'm not going to sit up here and make any excuses for anything that's off the field. It's what's causing on the field. So, you know, I just got to be better this week, and I will be better, and we're going to continue to grow each and every week to, you know, get to where we want to ultimately be at the end of the year.
Did you have any idea that this lawsuit was coming when you were playing Sunday?
No, sir. I found out exactly whenever everyone else found out.
Okay, and everybody else found out Monday afternoon. That we should mention, Tony Busby, after Rusty Harden's statement yesterday, I don't know if it was after Deshaun's press conference or not, but put up a post on Instagram. Busby, the attorney for the plaintiff, the Jane Doe in this case, saying this. It's a lengthy post. I'll read the part that's relevant here. We reached out to attorney Rusty Harden's office for we've reached out to attorney Rusty Harden's office for 10 months in an attempt to resolve this case. We knew the case was the most serious and egregious case brought against Watson to date, and our client, who is rightly traumatized by these events, wanted to attempt a private resolution. We thought that was the best approach given the media storm that occurred surrounding all the other claims. Unfortunately, Watson's team, or maybe his lawyers, couldn't or wouldn't give this case the attention it was due. Mr. Harden now has tried to contact us since we filed suit. Unfortunately, we see that now as too little too late, but we are officers of the court and will give Mr. Harden and his esteemed team the respect he has earned, and we will work with him to progress this case in an efficient manner. Busby goes on to get in a couple shots at Watson here, saying, I can understand, given the number of women that Mr. Watson has interacted with, that he could forget some or many of them. However, given the nature of this case, I expect this incident is something he wouldn't soon forget. We look forward to a trial by jury.
Oh, yeah. So
we might be getting a trial on this one.
As far as, and Busby, Busby made his name for himself originally by taking cases to trial that usually in the oil and gas industry wouldn't go to trial. They'd be quick settlements and that would be it. And obviously this is a whole different, different beast than oil and gas business, workers' comp type stuff.
Sure.
And where the alleged victims, it can be ugly for them. I wonder with Deshaun saying, well, for one, yeah, he didn't really answer the question about when asked about whether the stuff outside the field would how he was managing that and everything. He didn't really give a direct answer to that. I guess how much do you think at this point he may have compartmentalized it to where, like, I'm going to let my legal team just handle all of this stuff as it comes up, and I don't even really want to be aware of it until I need to be aware of it? Is that realistic or possible that in the last 10 months he just didn't even really know about it?
Or attempting to compartmentalize. Like, I don't know how good he is at it, but attempting to compartmentalize. Oh, that over the last 10 months he would have no idea that Busby was reaching out to him about this other case.
Yeah, that maybe he told Rusty just like, listen, just handle this stuff and let me know and send me the bill, but I don't want to have it in my brain. I just want to try to just stay focused and moving forward.
Yeah, I could see that. I think one of the big takeaways would be, it would appear, just putting the pieces together on this, that this would not be a woman that Deshaun would have notified the Browns about before signing the contract. Remember, there was the language in his contract that there was like a side letter that Deshaun did about, hey, these are all the lawsuits. This is what else could be floating around on the radar. And if any of the women that came forward after signing the contract were on that side letter, then he wouldn't get suspended. He wouldn't be subject to the personal conduct policy.
I just, separate all the details of the cases and everything and just put yourself in a position where just a hypothetical situation, Sean, where let's say everything had been 100% consensual and or you believed it was 100% consensual, but you have to sit down there. And maybe with like one of the, like a 58-year-old paralegal from Rusty Harden's office and sit down there in an afternoon or two and detail all of the encounters you've had with women over the last several years.
Yeah.
That's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's,
it's
like the point where you're like, wait a second, Darlene. There's another one I just thought of. And then, Darlene just sits there trying to keep a straight face the whole time and not any disgust or anything.
Right.
That's brutal. Rough.
Yep. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. All right. Caleb Williams coming to town this weekend. Seth sat down and watched the entirety of Caleb Williams' NFL career. Over the last couple days.
Yes,
one game.
I did. Yeah, it was a pretty impressive effort by me.
Yeah, good job. But Seth has some insight here as to what maybe some of the things the Texans could take advantage of. What are the things Caleb Williams needs to clean up for the game this weekend, or else it's going to be a rough night for him? We'll do that coming up next.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast. Here's D'Amico Ryans yesterday. Our first look at the Bears offense and Caleb Williams through the eyes of the head coach.
Bears, what I see offensively is starting with the quarterback with Caleb, really, you know, exciting player to watch. Strong arm, like the guy can move around the pocket, scramble in a throw. Like he's, you have to stay on your coverage, right? Because he's going to find someone downfield. So it's, we have to be on the details there when it comes to him moving around in the pocket and just their running game. I think that's where everything starts. They do a good job of their zone scheme, right? Getting Swift going on the outside. We have to do a great job in the run game. And then they have playmakers on the outside. Keenan Allen, all right, DJ Moore, two big-time playmakers who've done it for a while in this league. Guys, we have to be aware of where they are in all situations, and we have to make sure we're as sticky as possible in coverage versus them.
So we should point out, before we get into, Seth, your analysis of Caleb Williams from watching his game last week against the Titans, we should point out that both Keenan Allen and Roma Dunze, two of the three big wide receivers they have, DJ Moore being the other one, they didn't practice yesterday. Neither Allen nor Dunze practiced yesterday. The Dunze injury sounds a little more serious. It was a knee that they had to MRI, and he's week to week kind of thing. I have no idea if he's going to play or not, but that sounded a little more serious. Allen's injury is listed as a heel. He's always hurt over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So who knows if that means he's going to play or not going to play. Who knows with Keenan
it's,
Allen.
Look, it was, I don't think, you know, and people are making various, you know, attempts and stabs at looking smarter than everybody else and saying it wasn't actually that bad of a performance by Caleb Williams. It was a bad performance, but I think the thing is, okay, you got to take it with a grain of salt. It's his first start as a rookie. There were a lot of things going on with the offense that were bad that didn't necessarily have anything to do with Caleb Williams, which should make you concerned as a Bears fan. But it was one start. I think the biggest thing, if I'm sitting here as a Texans fan and thinking, all right, like let's not overlook Caleb Williams and act like he's a bust after one start.
Right.
The biggest thing that would concern me is that several of the really bad throws that Caleb Williams had was where he just airmailed it to wide open wide receivers downfield. There was the potential for big plays in that game. Caleb Williams screwed it up and had bad throws, but it's like when you're facing that offense and thinking, look, we can't be letting these guys run free. We are the Texans defense that has a history recently of giving up big plays despite playing good defense otherwise. Yeah. That can really, really bite you. The Bears did potentially have some big plays on the docket last week, but Caleb Williams was just wildly inaccurate in those throws. So my question is, all right, is it just rookie nerves? I don't think that's something that he's going to typically do over time, but I don't know how long it takes for him to iron it out. And whether it comes in week two or week five or week six, I would prefer it not come in week two.
Yeah, I think of the two teams here, I think the Bears are, well, I mean, they're the road team, so what I'm about to say sounds a little obvious. But I really think the Bears wish this game was a noon Sunday game, not a 7:15 yeah. game on Sunday. Like, a noon Sunday game would have lent itself more to the typical kind of late arriving Houston crowd. I think between the afternoon tailgating, the excitement, I think it's going to be a really loud stadium on Sunday.
It's going to be really, really loud. And you had a quarterback who at home looked like a nervous rookie in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And that's where, if you're making excuses for Caleb Williams, I think that it's fair to say that the interior offensive line was horrendous. They were really, really bad. Now, they were facing a young Tavondre Sweat, who has not been yet tired and worn down by carrying around 360 pounds of mass, and then Jeffrey Simmons, a very good defensive tackle. Yeah. So those guys physically destroyed the Bears' interior offensive line. That was hard for a rookie quarterback especially to deal with. But it's funny because, man, a lot of the same things that you could say about Justin Fields, you can say about Caleb Williams. His footwork gets him in trouble. Being sloppy with your footwork, it matters in tight NFL pockets where there's one, maybe there's a little bit of pressure or maybe bad pressure by one defensive lineman. But when you're heel clicking and slopping around and then trying to throw the football, yeah, that's when you airmail people. And I don't think he's going to fix his sloppy footwork between week one and week two.
No.
So that part, if I were a Bears fan, I'd be really nervous about the fact, like, oh, yeah, I remember the guy with crazy arm talent who was sloppy in some regards, but you thought maybe he could scramble around and do something. Sounds a lot like Justin Fields.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, and it sounds like the opposite of C.J. Stroud, whose footwork yeah. remains immaculate even when there's all kinds of clutter around him.
Yeah, you know? And C.J. already had good mechanics, and he improved on them throughout right. his rookie season.
Right.
His mechanics actually got better as the year went along, but he started off at a much better place than than Caleb Williams does.
Yeah.
I think that big thing, the interior offensive line is an opportunity. I think that, yes, the Titans' defensive tackles played very well, but those offensive linemen were getting beaten like Xavier Suafolo type of ways.
Oh, geez.
Just getting trucked. Yeah. Like having a bad pass rush. Having bad pass protection on a screen is not something that on a play where offensive linemen are supposed to lose the down intentionally
yeah.
to try to dupe them into rushing upfield. And then the quarterback trying to scramble out of it instead of just throwing the ball at the feet of the screen recipient. That was combination. All right. It was bad O-line play, but it was really, really dumb rookie quarterback stuff. You took it was like a 17-yard sack by Tavondre Sweat.
Yeah.
You know, it just, the stuff that shouldn't, oh, you've got this incredible guy who can create with his feet. Who sacked him?
Yeah.
Did Julius Peppers come back in his prime?
Right.
No, it was Tavondre Sweat.
Yeah.
397-pound defensive tackle.
He tackled him.
Just got back there too fast. Yeah.
I'm just thinking of the Bears offensive linemen when you're describing the screens. Like on these downs, they're supposed to lose because it's a screen.
Yeah.
Supposed to let the guys get after the quarterback, but not that bad. I'm just picturing like the O-line coach, like, Johnson, you're supposed to lose the down. You're not supposed to get blown out. All right.
Yeah. Or just not try to block him at all is
right.
what happened.
Yeah.
Like, the guard is just like, see ya, big fella. Yeah. I'm gonna go seek glory downfield by blocking a linebacker.
Ah. Oh, what's happening back there? There's a great big fat person on top of Caleb.
Yeah, so that was really dumb by Caleb Williams. That was a stupid rookie mistake taking that sack, but it was also bad offensive line play. The one thing that I was really intrigued by, and man, putting this on film in week one doesn't bode well for Caleb Williams in week two, was that he was barely under center at all. He had 14 snaps under center, 4 pass attempts under center. He was 1 for 4 on those pass attempts. But even when they were in the gun, it's not like they were working an RPO game or anything all that much. They were just letting Caleb Williams sit back there and I guess expected him to dissect NFL defenses as a rookie in his first start. Maybe he's so bad under center that they just didn't even want to mess with it. But even in the gun, they didn't try to threaten run or show run all that much. They just had him back there in empty backfield sets going, like, go ahead, do your best Tom Brady impression. I didn't get it. I thought it was malpractice.
That feels like something that does not get fixed in a week.
Right,
what
right,
you just described.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, they may put him under center more, but he's never done that before, you know?
It was a classic thing where, man, in the preseason, he did some really impressive stuff in the preseason. And I love drinking the Kool-Aid in the preseason when I can. I like looking at upside, and I watched Caleb Williams in the preseason, and I did a couple videos on it, and I was open and saying, look, this is versus the Bengals, not even second and third stringers.
Right.
Half the guys that he played against in the Bengals game aren't even on the Bengals roster right now.
Right.
But there were plays in that game where you're like, all right, well, he ain't running away from Jeffrey Simmons the way he did against that guy from Appalachian State.
Yes.
And that's exactly what happened in the game. There were times where he thought he was going to work his USC magic. And this is the other thing that rookie quarterbacks have to understand and learn, too. Talk about the bad USC offensive line all you want. It's not the same. It's like there are good performances by NFL offensive lines where it's still more uncomfortable for the quarterback than a bad performance by the USC offensive line.
Yep.
It's just the pockets are more uncomfortable. The pressure comes faster. You can't run away from nearly as many defensive linemen. And that part of it looked very much like a college quarterback learning about life in the NFL.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Man, we're going to be all over this tomorrow on a Football Friday, getting you ready for Sunday. 4:20 pregame, 7:20 kickoff. Can't wait to see you guys out there. And then Clint Sterner and I have the postgame show into the wee hours. Love having primetime games back, man. This is a whole lot of fun. Dude, NFL fans are crazy. Yesterday was 9/11, and there's an NFL team that posted, you know, a never forget. NFL fans for this team went bananas off the chain yesterday in response to this post. It was wild. We've got some of the wildness for you coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Somebody pointed out to us earlier when we were going through where our selections are in the NFL head coach career death pool, where Seth and I each pick four coaches with an attempt to try to get the one who gets fired first. Neither of us had Dave Canales of the Panthers. I think largely because, not because we thought the Panthers would be good or better, but because the Panthers have fired the first head coach each of the last two seasons.
Right. And yet we've been in this situation before where we were skeptical that, like, I don't know, will they fire Lovie Smith like 1 year after firing a head coach after 1 year? And the Texans went ahead and did it. But this would be three in a row.
Yeah. Well, this would be like Matt Rhule would have been like the Bill O'Brien in that case. Guy had been there a couple years, and then they bring in Frank Reich. They fire him. So I guess Dave.
That's true. Yeah, this would be okay.
So Dave Canales would be like Lovie Smith in this case.
Yeah. The difference there was with Lovie Smith, it had the feel of a bridge coach scenario.
Yes.
And the question was, okay, when do they decide to go forth? And it didn't feel during that season like, okay, that in 2023 they were going to make the push forward. And yet they did, to their credit.
Yeah. And so Canales, unlike Lovie, was specifically brought in to repair Bryce Young the same way he helped repair Geno Smith, the same way he helped repair Baker Mayfield last year. I think he was thought to be a bit of like a broken quarterback whisperer, you know? And so he would come in and help Bryce. It's only one game in, but the story out of Carolina, I guess, is that he's already had to sit down and have a meeting with Dave Tepper and Nicole Tepper, Dave's wife.
And Frank Reich said those were not fun meetings.
Yeah, yeah, yes. He specifically talked about
those
meetings.
Remember, Frank Reich basically, like, it was honestly, like, it was super Frank for, Frank Reich. It was like a super frank comment about how brutal those meetings with Dave Tepper are, as you can imagine, as the new Daniel Snyder of the NFL.
Yes.
He's a hard man to handle.
Yes. So Canales talked about it. He's like, oh, I just want to make them proud and whatever, we'll see. Like, I think Canales getting fired is firmly on the board right now, and he might be good value. They are so angry in Carolina right now, Seth. The Panthers put up yesterday, of course, was 9/11, and all over the country we remember everybody who passed in 9/11, everybody affected by it. The Panthers put up a picture of their stadium with a large American flag covering the field, saying "Never forget" with a American flag emoji next to it. Well, Panther fans are certainly angry enough now to where the sentiment of that Instagram was lost on many of them in the comments section. This post is still not safe. Every Sunday feels like I'm reliving 9/11, says a poster. Our towers have been collapsing since 2017. Ooh. Someone says "Never forget 9/8," which was the opening day of this season when they lost to the Saints 47-10. There's some that are way worse than this that I'm just not going to read. But like a few of them are like, I can't believe that the Panthers left comments open for this. You know, like,
Sean, I can't read it because the Panthers have either blocked me or
really,
did you link to the Panthers themselves or did you link to one of those stupid aggregator accounts?
No. I've linked to the Panthers. I'm pretty sure this is a Panthers post themselves. Yeah.
It says I'm unable to view this post because this account owner limits who can view their posts.
Wow.
Somehow I think I'm blocked by the Panthers.
Yeah. Saddam.
You can still click on it.
Yeah.
Why the hell am I blocked by the Panthers?
Let me double check and make sure that this isn't like ML football or one of those ones. Yeah. Oh, it is ML football. Sorry,
dude.
Seth.
Okay, yeah. I'm blocked by them. And
yeah,
I think
my
it's
bad.
I openly criticized them once for being a really irresponsible account, it's garbage. And radio hosts and other people on Twitter shouldn't forward their content because it's trash.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
So I'm blocked by that trash aggregator.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry about that. I gotta make a note of that when I put this stuff up. Let's see. Saddam Hussein would have been a better defensive coordinator. Someone posted in the comments. I'll never forget Bryce Young's first play of the season either. As far as like, I'll never forget when a lot of them are, they'll never forget .. I'll never forget when we had a good team. Panther fans, man, it's, these are,
let me ask you this. Are the Panthers a team that might try to hire Bobby Slowik in the offseason?
Yes, of course.
Do you think Bobby Slowik would accept that job?
You know what? I'm going to say no, because I think that Bobby Slowik is, and I have no information to this effect. Like, I don't talk to Bobby Slowik, so I don't know. But Bobby Slowik strikes me as somebody who gets advice from D'Amico Ryans, and part of D'Amico's advice to Bobby, because D'Amico was asked about that last year, was to just be judicious about the job that you pick. Don't just jump at a job. And I think Bobby Slowik's going to attack this a lot like Ben Johnson is attacking it in Detroit, where the jobs that he's been in the running for just aren't the right job. I've long felt that way, that coaches, at least coaches who are viewed as like future stars, don't take, like, Robert Saleh probably really regrets taking the Jets job right now. Like, Robert Saleh was viewed as a really high level future coach. She being coming off the Shanahan tree and coaching elite defenses, and probably, like D'Amico, having a guy or two in his back pocket that could coordinate a Coop Shanahan-y offense. And now he gets, the first 2 years he gets Zach Wilson, and then the last couple of years he's had to deal with Nathaniel Hackett being his OC because he keeps Aaron Rodgers happy. You know,
it's honestly one of the things, if we go through our the coaches who are most likely to be fired. Yeah. Usually it's to a team that's in rough straits, obviously, for whatever reason. And if I go down the line of the guys, according to Vegas, who are most likely to be fired right now, and I look at some of the teams, like, okay, if you want to keep Bobby Slowik around, are you worried about the Giants appealing to Bobby Slowik? That's the number one. Brian Daboll is the leader right now, his first coach to be fired.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that would come down to whether or not Joe Shane is still the GM.
Yes.
And whether I think the Giants as a franchise, and even though the owner kind of looked like a doofus in Hard Knocks, I think there is a air of stability around them that, and you know, the history of the Giants and everything else like that, that I think Bobby Slowik might be tempted by the Giants, but is he going to fit with Joe Shane or trust Joe Shane or whomever they pick to be the GM after they fire Joe Shane? That in my mind is probably the biggest threat. Cause if I go down the line after that, Saints, the Jets, the Browns, Jaguars.
Yeah.
I think the Jaguars might be the next one where I feel like, okay, that might be appealing to Bobby Slowik, depending on what he feels about Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence, yeah. And the Giants one is interesting because obviously I think Daniel Jones would need to be gone. I don't think
Slowik it would be that if Bobby Slowik thinks about going to the Giants, he's hoping that they suck this year.
Yeah, and
they've got a really high draft pick.
Yes, they have a really high draft pick. The answer to that question, Seth, with all these teams, may come down to what the quarterback class looks like in the draft. You know, one of the reasons D'Amico Ryans, the reasons you point out are all great. Like, we're very fortunate that D'Amico and Nick Caserio were able to vibe as well as they did during the recruitment process, or the process of filling that job. So the GM thing was a good checkbox for D'Amico, I would imagine, as he's evaluating that. But I would imagine, and the other thing you got to look at is, can we win? And then D'Amico probably looked at the guys that were already on the team from the 2022 draft, the amount of cap space they were going to have once they got all the O'Brien stuff cleaned up. And they probably, you know, and at that point it was cleaned up. But the cap space they would have in the future, but that number two overall pick, and D'Amico Ryans saying, okay, well, we've got a shot at one of these quarterbacks here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know who that quarterback is in this draft that makes a high level job super tempting.
Okay. I'm about to present you an offer, Sean, that is going to be tough.
Okay.
If you were Bobby Slowik, Would you go to the Dallas Cowboys?
Ooh. Ooh, boy.
If we're talking about ownership and the general manager that you'd be working with, they are one and the same.
Yeah.
They are Jerry Jones.
They're Jerry Jones.
The GM is Jerry Jones. The owner is Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
Would you, going in and having Dak Prescott, who plays in a West Coast system, similar in a lot of respects to the Texans, would you feel like, okay, I've got a quarterback and I can take him to a higher level? They've been very good in the regular season, and yet it also is not viewed as the best place in terms of, it's weird. They'll spend the money and everything else, but you've got an owner and a GM that feels like the limiting factor in a lot of ways for the Cowboys right now.
He's not going to be around forever. that owner and GM.
Are we so sure about it?
I know.
I could give him another 20 years.
Yeah,
you know?
He may outlive us. So I would take that job.
That man is pickled for preservation right now.
I would take that. He's also very patient with head coaches too. We should point that out, you know.
As long as like he feels like they're his do boys.
Right.
As long as he's got him under his thumb. And well, it's probably going to come with like a $20 million per year.
There's
offer.
That too. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that matters to me. I can be bought much easier than Bobby Slowick and Ben Johnson can get bought.
It would be hard, man, because you could look at the Cowboys and say, all right, well, I think I can get more out of, I don't want to say like more out of Dak Prescott. He's done very, very well, but they have all the weaponry and everything else. And as much fun as it is to throw shade at the Cowboys in the for how they've performed in the postseason, they've been a very good football team. It would be hard to turn that down. Well, it would be really hard, especially if it was $20 million per year.
And I know you bring up like Jerry Jones is the GM, but I do think it's a group effort in the front office there with Will McCray and whatnot. And I do think that they've drafted really well. Like, there's a reason they're having to pay all these guys is because they've drafted good players, you know?
The hardest thing about it, and this is where Bobby would have to make the tough decision, is that former players like Michael Irvin and whomever else specifically point to the circus-like atmosphere that Jerry Jones creates and invites as one of the hard things where it's really hard to have that tight-knit, cohesive feel to the team that other teams might have. It's a natural obstacle you have to ultimate success because it's a circus-like atmosphere. And I don't think Bobby is going to go in and feel like, well, I'll be the one that changes Jerry Jones after four decades.
We have someone uniquely qualified to comment on this.
His name is John Lopez.
We have someone uniquely qualified to comment on this. And Lopez. you are too, John. But Reggie, of course, with your Dallas background, you did years and years of radio up in Dallas. You've been listening in on this conversation. Curious your thoughts on this. If you were Bobby Slowick, would you take the Dallas Cowboys job?
I mean, I think Seth brings up a great point. The money is going to be there in spades, right? Like, the tough thing about it is indeed Jerry Jones, right? Like, he makes this into a tough place to exist in, especially if you want to be someone who is the trendsetter, right? You're not going to have a D'Amico situation where you are the face of this thing. It's not going to happen. And as much as Jerry Jones is getting up there in age, it becomes a Stephen Jones proposition after that. And Stephen also has his own warts. Like, he is, you know, tight with the money in some ways as well. So you come with a different challenge there. However, you're right. Will McClay does a great job drafting players.
That's what I called him, McCray.
And there is a lot of talent there. You would be able to, I think you could convince Jerry Jones to your side if you produce quickly, which I think Bobby Slowick could possibly do.
There's definitely the pieces there. What do you think about it, John?
In a heartbeat.
You would?
Wouldn't even blink my eyes. And the reason, the biggest reason, all those are good reasons, but mine, if I'm a coach, I'm looking at the roster.
Yeah.
What am I working with?
Yep.
And the pieces there are
pretty, they're better than most first opportunity,
especially a quarterback.
Seth, you know this. Like, every coach, that's the first thing they look at after how much money.
Yep.
You know? Well, and that's the thing too. Like, as awesome as CJ Stroud is, if most personnel people, if they're being 100% honest with you, and I think like when the Texans drafted CJ Stroud, they really don't know what they have in him until he's in the building, until they see him operate and do all those things and go through the process. The unknown of the quarterback prospect versus the known of Dak Prescott is just, it's vast. It is vast. And that would be, despite all of the obstacles of dealing with Jerry Jones, man, it would be hard to turn that down.
Roster.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
Let me see the roster.
No job's going to be perfect.
Yeah.
You know, like it's Kyle Shanahan's not stepping down from the 49ers for Slowick to go back there or something.
Exactly.
You know? They are working their way to cap hell, though.
Yeah. They are working their way to cap hell.
Well, so are the Texans.
Yeah.
And a little further down the
road. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
Hell is relative. You can buy your way into a better level of hell if you manage it right.
Degrees.
I think the thing, too, that would work for Bobby Slowick in getting offered that job is that I think Jerry would look at Bobby Slowick and think, like, oh, yeah, I can boss him around like a Jason Garrett or a Mike McCarthy. He's just another slappy, pasty dude. That Bobby's got some dog to him. Yeah. Like, don't underestimate Bobby. Like, he's one of these guys that don't let his appearances fool you. I think Bobby don't take no crap from nobody when it comes to certain things.
He's just a kid wearing his baggy long sleeve T-shirts and his flat brimmed
too big of a hat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That does feel like that could work to his advantage, though, right? Like, he can have his feelings and make you feel like you're still in charge.
Yeah.
That might be able to work for you.
Yeah. Game of Thrones stuff going on.
There you go.
Now. Yeah, I like that. All right.
Did I just call him Littlefinger? Is that what I just did?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I like it. Reggie's a Game of Thrones guy, too.
Yeah, well.
I'm learning more. Just finished season 4 of The Sopranos.
That's right.
Yeah.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.